It will, no, it's like, it's revelation. Or I'm not.
I'm very visual, so.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not very visual.
Yeah.
A couple of big ones out there.
So, thanks for coming, and hopefully this will be a good use of your time tonight. My name is Becky Swanson. I'm a deaconess with the ELCA. I serve a congregation at St. Anthony Park Lutheran Church in a part-time call as one of the choir directors. And much of the rest of the time that I've served the church as a church musician, I've worked in the area of corporate training and organizational development. And recently have left what I fondly refer to as Cube Farm and gone off with a friend of mine to do some executive coaching. And this is the model that we're using. It's a model based on our research. We work together off and on in different configurations since 1987 in different companies, kind of across a broad spectrum of industries. And his name is Larry, and I'll be referring to him frequently throughout this. And what we found as we worked together, either as in a reporting relationship or as a contractor-vendor kind of relationship, was that we very frequently got some of the same issues coming up around some leadership stuff, and it wasn't all just about teaching people how to use the proprietary software or the latest and greatest new thing that somebody read on a plane, and now we're going to have a new program. Welcome to corporate America. So before we get started, I'd like you to introduce yourself and tell me a little bit about why you're spending a beautiful Holden evening and you're talking to me about leadership. Glenn?
My name is Glenn. What drew me to this was I like the acronym of ART, of admired, respected, trusted, because it made me think of what leaders, because I haven't thought of leadership in those terms. And I thought, well, what leaders do I admire, respect, and trust? And I said, well, that's pretty good. Those are the qualities, now that I think about it. So anything that can bump me a little farther in that direction, that'd be great. Because we're all leaders whether we want to be or not, you know,
yeah.
Whether we're just in our family cluster or a group of friends, you don't have to be a CEO to be a leader.
Right.
So transform me, please.
Well, in 20 minutes. Or 40. I think I'll pass on that particular assignment.
Okay.
But maybe we'll give you an idea of where,
a few
clues, yeah.
Hi, Tom from Round Rock, Texas. And,
Tom.
Involved with our church and ideas here that we have some stick in the mud and we want to do some change. And, I look for consensus rather than vote.
Yeah.
I really look for consensus if we can do that. We see a need of change.
Okay. I'm Darlene here to tell you. And I came to be really honest because I didn't want to go to Bonhoeffer.
And what sort of leadership stuff do you do in,
oh,
we're talking a little bit about
some
your
work, some
corporate
church
stuff?
But I don't know what I had. I think just the general question of change would be interesting in my first work.
So we're introducing ourselves and saying a little bit about what why you're in this room instead of that room or in the ice cream line. Just so
my name's Christy.
Hi, Christy.
I came actually more because of my job, which is social.
Okay.
So it's relevant to being a teacher and also to helping my students become leaders.
Yeah.
But also in church, the candidacy committee.
So you're on the candidacy committee yourself?
Yeah.
Cool. So before you came in, I was just shared a little bit about my path to this work through the area of corporate training and organizational development. I'm also a Lutheran deaconess with the ELCA, which is different than the Lutheran deaconesses, and I'll talk about that on Friday, because I know you're all just dying to know the difference there. And so this work is something that springs out of mostly my corporate life, and my corporate and incorporation life, my non-church work. But as we worked on it, it was stuff that I was like, oh, you know, the church really needs some of this. And I saw some things where it sure would be applicable. So I hope that you find it that way too. Change is one that I hear a lot. How do I, a lot of pastors that I talk to are just, they're either concerned and wondering, or they're actually really kind of frightened.
That's right.
About the what they're being asked to do as a pastor that they really don't feel equipped to do. They feel equipped.
We didn't hear from this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead and introduce
yourself. Oh, I've been here too.
He's my roadie.
I'm
so sorry. Thank you for calling me on that. I completely forgot. Go ahead, sir. Would you like to introduce yourself and say a little bit about why you're here?
I'm Gary, and I'm the roadie, so I had to bring the accordion over from there to here. So,
do you want to say a little bit about why leadership is interesting?
Well,
I
work with Audrey Fortress. I mean, it's
a retail
store that's at Luther Seminary in St. Paul. It's the only one in the country.
Yes.
So we've closed all of our retail stores. I'm the head and the director of U.S. retail operations. So it's a pretty good title. I haven't asked to put that in my business card yet. So leadership and understanding and kind of the whole focus.
And this really plays into what you said about being a leader everywhere and, you know, kind of messing up once in a while.
Wow. Yeah.
thanks.
That's right.
So then you're going to get to know a little bit more about the complications of my life. My husband's name is Gary. My business partner's name is Larry. And Gary used to be married to Nancy, who died about 10 years ago. And Larry is also married to Nancy.
Oh. Wow.
Now you know why I drink so much coffee. Anyway, so what Larry and I have found, and I think if you're out paying attention at all around, you'll know that there's a lot of leadership challenges today. Leaders in all different kinds of spheres are under a lot more scrutiny, and that's not a bad thing. But that puts a lot of pressure on folks that maybe don't feel like they're prepared to be a leader. The change issue about happening faster and faster. And this is true in business as well as in the church. For leaders today, it's not enough to have the title and authority. Pastors are finding this, you know, every graduation, every first call. It's not enough to have that title pastor to be an effective leader. You have to know some other stuff. You have to have some other skills. And being the good or even the best at what you do, being the best musician, being the best computer network guy, being the best CEO of retail or whatever, doesn't necessarily mean that you're a good leader. And the organization, and you were alluding to this too, that this is also a family thing. So this, it really hits a lot of levels. One of the things that we knew right away was that this was going to be powerful, because Larry actually experienced this in his own family, going back and realizing that in his relationship with his son, he wasn't being as artful as he could have been, and went back and actually worked what he was prescribing for some executives, and made a huge difference in his relationship. So when we talk about artful and artless leaders, we define this a certain way. An artless leader is someone that really has their own perspective at top of mind. They will often create a committee of clones. You see this in movies as, you know, the yes men that are surrounding the big boss, right? It manifests itself in different levels in the rest of in real life. They squelch in individuality and creativity. They sap energy, suppress motivation. All these things are not really the best for being successful at whatever the organization is, whether it's a
company or a church or a family.
It's very unconscious. They don't realize they're doing these things.
Exactly, exactly.
They try so hard.
They try so hard. And they're yeah, so it really is a paying attention. And it's paying attention to something that they haven't ever been asked to pay attention to, which is the perspective of the people that they're leading. So this whole model really takes serious account of the perspective of the other. This finds the theology person in me really excited, because it really is a servant leader kind of model. An artful leader understands that you're really only as good as the people around you, and actively works to enable people to use their best gifts in the best way, honoring the contribution of each individual as much as possible, and encouraging creativity and infusing energy into the team or the function of the organization. It's a lot more fun to work in that kind of a team setting than in art less. And you know, the fact of the matter is that it's not a all or nothing proposition, right? We're all kind of a big old mess of everything. We're better at some things than at others. So, you know, the typical Venn diagram, admire, respect, and trust is what ART stands for. We came up with this because we were getting asked by C-suite executives and vice president level executives, why aren't my people listening to my feedback? Why don't they follow my directions? Why isn't this working? And so what we ended up asking them in return was, well, you know, tell me a little bit about what happens when somebody gives you feedback when you don't listen to it. Why would that be? And what emerged was, well, I don't respect that person, or I don't admire that person, or I don't trust that person. So turning that back to them, so could it be that you have a gap in how people are, whether people are admiring, respecting, and trusting you, and that's maybe why your feedback has no value for them and why they're disengaged. So as we began to talk to some of these leaders and work with this, it really became clear that pair of questions that you asked yourself, who do I art and who arts me, really became crucial. Who do I admire, respect, and trust? And who admire, respects, and trusts me? We did, over the last 10 years, we did a lot of research in these organizations, and we found that it kind of sifted out. We did a bunch of surveys and a bunch of interviews, and came up with about 5 drivers for each of the admire, respect, and trust. We analyzed a lot of stories, and we included a bunch of them in the book. There's observations with working with a lot of leaders, and so what I want to share with you tonight is those drivers and attributes. So it's sort of like if you're familiar with the idea of competency mapping, it's a little bit like that. But we want to define some things first, because admiration can be, you know, I can admire the first person. I can, no. This would fall into this definition. I mean, the first person that jumped to mind was Cher, and I have no idea why. But I can admire Cher, but I don't know Cher, right? So when we talk about admiration, we're talking about a specific kind of admiration where I actually know this person, this leader. It's not a, I know them by reputation. It's not, I know Bill Clinton or I know Gandhi. I actually have a relationship with this person, and I have experienced them delivering to, you know, these kinds of behaviors. Leaders who are admired or looked up to by those they lead due to the ability of that leader to act with integrity and connect to the individuals. So it's a specific kind of what we call intimate admiration. It's not a secondhand or thirdhand reputational admiration. Respect, again, is this genuine appreciation and gratitude towards a leader. And what we found is that almost exclusively, this respect piece now has to come first from the leader out. The world has changed from when I was a little girl, where you respected because of the badge, because of the uniform, because of the collar, because of the ruler up in the front of the room. We can have a big, long discussion about the goods and bads of that, but the fact is that people want to be respected, and that will build the respect. And then the trust piece, the ability ability of the leader to build these trusting relationships, and we know that trust can easily be destroyed and takes a long time to build, right? The good news is that it can, again, start by the leader initiating that trust. And there's some specific things that in business, and I think it would work in church too, at least in our beginning experience in the nonprofit and faith communities, it seems that this is happening for those leaders as well. These are all interdependent, though. You can't take them apart. We had a really actually hard time at the beginning when we were parsing this out and teasing it apart, because can you think of someone that you, now that you know how we're using admire, respect, and trust, that you admire and respect but don't trust? One of the interesting things that we did find is that it's, even though they're really interdependent, it seems that trust is the first thing. So if you're coming into a new situation, if you can build trusting relationships and not break down that trust, you're steps ahead of building admiration and respect. Those seem to take a little bit longer to build. People are willing with a new leader. Now, when you're repairing, that's a different conversation. Because repairing relationships, depending on how they've been broken, take more or less time to fix. But what we know is, from the interviews and the research that we've done, is that the admiration, respect, and trust is earned. It's not given away freely on this side of paradise. Leaders are being continually watched. It's earned through this sustained, consistent experience, and it's profoundly relational, which surprises a lot of leaders, because I think what we're finding is that a lot of leaders that aren't being perceived as someone that, you know, that's not getting admired, respected, or trusted, it's because they're not spending time on this relational piece. They think that they can write the memo, dictate from a, they're not making those relationships. They're not connecting with individuals. So, yeah, I'm going to pause here. Any comments?
Right now, the profoundly relational is really a present tense, like a cultivation that's ongoing.
Yes.
It's not like, I got it, there it is, thank you very much.
Right. Now I'm on the next person, and I won't talk to you for another 6 months.
Yeah, that it's a kind of this feel that you kind of have to keep cultivating.
So you can imagine how much energy that takes, and how there might be a limit to the number of active relationships you can keep sustained in a positive way. There's other research that's being done. I heard this actually from a children, youth, and family worker. I know I'm gonna forget, you're gonna have to remind me where this came from, where you can really only have active, like 50 relationships.
I've heard that too.
Yeah, 50, that's a lot less than what we think, isn't it? 50 is very
manageable.
It's a lot, but you think of a youth, some of these really big churches where there's 200 or 300 kids in the youth group and you've got one youth minister.
Yeah.
Now you know, you have an idea of why that person's burning out so fast. It simply can't be done. You simply can't know on the level that you need to know 300 people.
So that's 50 at what level? I mean, it's not like an acquaintances, but it's like...
Right. 50 people that you know on a
personal.
On a personal level.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
Now, I don't know that that's necessarily like, oh, well, I can only have 50 friends. You know, I do my Christmas card list, I've got more than 50 people on that.
Yeah.
But that's a different relationship, right?
But
if I'm going to throw a party.
The circle that you're talking about here, I think you have to encourage those that are going to be around you to be the same way to the people they're working with.
Yes, absolutely.
And then you build.
Yep. The most successful work we've done has been when a C-suite, so a CEO, CIO, CFO, C, right? Chief whatever it is, officer, chief looking out the window. And their team, the vice presidents or directors or however the organization, so the pastor and the council or the executive team or the pastor and the staff or, you know, that team goes through a coaching together and works on this and examines this all together. It's really powerful for the organization. Super powerful. result that we're finding in the work that we've done so far, which has been mostly in the profit corporation side, some nonprofit, some small business too though, and some faith-based communities, seems to be pretty consistent across those big boundaries, is that it opens the lines of communications. People begin to seek the leader or the leaders out for the opinion and point of view, and so it's more collaborative, and people are responding, and the organizations are energized, which is, you know, kind of what you want, right? To activate everyone's best gifts, yeah? So there's no way we can read that, but basically we're going to break it down a little bit. Admiration, or admire, respect, and trust. Each one of those has five drivers that we'll go through a little bit. And then, but you see, communication spans all of it. Another surprising thing that I'm always surprised at is when the leaders that we're working with are surprised that people don't perceive them as good communicators. Right? So think about that in your own experience for a minute. I'm the leader. I know what's going on. I think I've told who needs to know, communicated what I need to communicate. But if the people that really need to know or have questions don't perceive that I've communicated it, the communication hasn't really worked. And we rise to levels of leadership quickly without necessarily having practiced good communication skills. One of the foundational communication skills that we work on with people is giving and receiving, first receiving actually, receiving and giving feedback. So this is not, I need you to put that pile of wood over there. That's direction. That's work direction. This is feedback. This is more affective, right? We have some tools that we use, some measurement surveys and assessments. And if you might be familiar with a 360-degree feedback instrument that your HR department maybe has inflicted on you. And we have turned that a little bit on its head because, in our opinion, the most destructive thing about that instrument is that it's anonymous. So in a typical 360-degree feedback, I ask people, I ask my boss, I ask people that are peers, and I ask people that report to me to give feedback, answer a bunch of questions about how my performance is. And I get this information, and sometimes it's just on a scale, 1 to 5, and sometimes it's essay questions. But I typically don't, in a regular 360, don't know who's giving this feedback. So I get a piece of feedback that I don't like. All I do is spend my time and energy going, who is out to get me? Oh my gosh, I'm going to get her. I just know who this is. And spending, instead of saying, is there any truth in this? Do I need to do anything about it? I don't know who this is. I may not even admire, respect, or trust this person. I'm going to pick on you for a minute. Okay? You know, I don't admire her. I don't care what she says about me. I am going to ignore this piece of feedback. So our 360-degree feedback assessment tool thingy is different. I ask people that I admire, respect, and trust. And when I invite you to answer to fill out my survey, you know two things. First of all, that I'm asking you because I value your feedback. And I trust you, most importantly, to give me feedback that I need to hear to be better. Second of all, you know that I'm going to know what you said. It's an open feedback assessment tool. So that scares the bejesus out of a lot of people, right? Think about how hard it is sometimes to get feedback. It's not always easy. In the coaching relationship, when we're using the feedback, the assessment tool, we walk people through it. Okay, so why do you think Glenn said this? Well, I'm not sure. Okay, well let's ask Glenn. Glenn, tell me about what you wrote here. I gotta say I was a little surprised by your feedback. Can you tell me a little bit more about what was going on, what you meant? Not only am I getting clear on what I need to do differently, I'm repairing my relationship with Glenn.
But do you think people are honest? I mean, I'm a retired teacher, and the principal would ask for that, and I'm thinking,
honest one, we don't really want people to be honest. And we don't ask you, when we use this tool, it's like, you want people to be honest. And it's, I'm not going to lie to you, it's not easy for some people to hear this feedback.
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it's
with,
so important.
If you don't have respect for that person,
right.
And I've had various principles also,
I've
also taught, and I can think of some that wouldn't respect what I'm going to say to them, and they don't respect the staff as a whole.
Right.
They said, one quoted saying, you get on the train or get out.
Yeah.
You know, he had some ideas, and the staff is pushing back.
But the other one is, if you don't like it, I got 30 people that'll take your job.
Yeah,
that's kind of common.
But anyway, he left.
Right.
The staff was strong, and we were more mature.
Yeah.
And he left.
And that's the key word. It takes an enormous amount of personal maturity to be able to enter into this kind of development for yourself as a leader. And not every leader, frankly, cares. They tend to be more heartless than heartful.
Yeah, but anyway, what you're trying to say here, I think, is based on respect. If you have respect for the person, I think you can communicate.
Yep.
And I had a principal who could do it pretty frankly back and forth.
Yeah.
If it was working, he would call me and say what's working, what's not. You know?
Yeah.
And that was a lot more fruitful of a conversation.
Oh, yeah. You know,
and how valuable for him that he had you to be able to give him that feedback. I mean, it's the biggest gift you can have. Really. When we talk about admiration, what the research that we've done has shown is that it comes down to being able to deliver consistent results, and that talks about strategy and operational planning and executing flawlessly. Of course, flawlessly is a big, aspirational word, right? No one is flawless. Hi, we're at Hilton Village. We all know about original sin and all that kind of jazz, right? But These are the areas of the questions that we ask. Competent, are they knowledgeable? Do they have leadership ability? Do they just demonstrate leadership ability, or do you perceive it? And a tenacious drive to succeed. Isn't that interesting, I think, for admiration? We want our leaders to care about not just themselves, but the organization as well. There's a lot about social dexterity and networking and being authentic. These relationships really need to feel authentic, and there's the pieces that play into that are this confidence and the connections and the compatibility. So you could be working for somebody that's a really artful leader, but maybe it's just not compatible, right? So you might have feedback for each other about that, and represents with credibility. So the high moral compass, the values, the integrity, the reputation. We feel like for the most part, we shouldn't have to even look at that in faith-based leadership. And yet, we know we have to look at that in faith-based leadership. If you are in a faith-based organization and trying to lead there, and you get feedback that people aren't sure about your integrity, boy, don't you think that's a piece of feedback you would want to know? If you really have integrity, but it's not coming out somehow, it also might be something important for the executive committee. In respect, we're talking about being supportive, the loyal, dependable, encouraging piece, the affective, kind of touchy-feely stuff. One person called me that. I'm like, they called this. Well, it kind of is, but it's not really touchy-feely. This is really pretty concrete stuff. I mean, do you throw people under the bus in the meeting? Now, there's a reason we use that metaphor. Because when it happens to you, it looks like you just got run over by a bus. This demonstration of mutual respect, are you approachable? Can you exhibit a genuine interest in others? Or do people kind of take you as, it's all cocktail conversation and my example for this is going into a particular audience office and introducing myself for the first time over 5 years to the same person. There's no genuine interest in who I am if I'm continuing there. And tell me what you do. They're responsible and accountable, not only for themselves, but in a fair and honest best way holding other people accountable, and this feedback piece, and the fair and balanced. You know, life is not fair and all these things, but at the same time, what we're finding in business is that people want to see their leaders as not holding favorites. And there's a lot of examples of that happening. I think the other really interesting conversation piece that I've had with faith-based leaders on this model is that they have no idea what their congregation is up against in their work. Many pastors that I talked to went from college to seminary to the pulpit, and they didn't work a day in an office. And they haven't really spent time visiting their congregation. And it's a little hard to know what you're going through at a school if you haven't ever been there. It's a little hard to know what your life is like in academia or in social work or in the cube farm. And, you know, the reason that some of these metaphors, the rat race and the dog-eat-dog world and all these things, is that our people are up against this stuff. They're up against leaders that don't exhibit this stuff. It's kind of an eye-opener for the pastors that I work with. They're a little shocked. They're a little shocked because they think it's all like a little church that they do. And it's not. Even their little church isn't like their little church. Extending trust first. Part of that is exhibiting some vulnerability, not to the point where, you know, you're saying all your deep, dark secrets every time you have coffee with somebody, but an appropriate level of vulnerability, appropriate levels of sharing information. Larry worked with somebody, and I've worked with people too, but he tells a story in the book about this woman that he worked with for 3 years. Nobody in the office knew she had kids. Seriously? You don't know your manager has kids? That's a little walled off. People are put off by that. I'm just going to say it. And this idea of sharing power. You've probably heard a lot about limiting the micromanaging, but this goes beyond not micromanaging to actually empowering people. And that's a scary thing, you know, because it's not going to turn out the way I thought it would, but I trust you enough. I respect you enough. I know that you are good enough at what you do that even though it won't turn out the way maybe I would have designed it, it's going to be good. It's going to be good, and it's going to be good for the school. You know, that's a leader that will get you to volunteer for the next assignment too, right? And this keeping confidence, oh man. There's one organization I work with that is wrapped around the axle between the poles of confidentiality, what has to be kept confidential legally, and what is appropriate for the entire organization to know about. The leader has to navigate this, right? There's some things that need to be kept confidential. Not just HIPAA things, you know, healthcare issues, but you know, if I come to my boss and I ask my boss to keep this confidential, I don't want to hear about it from somebody else later. I can't trust him then. Clear standards, speaking the truth, cultivating interpersonal relationships again, and being collaborative. So these are the drivers and attributes. The assessment questionnaire comes up to 80 questions, because we've got a few that will repeat some things, and there's a few communication questions in each section to assess, in this area, how's the communication? And you know, for these drivers and attributes, how's the How does this leader get the idea of accountability across? How does this leader communicate fairly? How does this leader communicate candidly? Things like that. So in our work, what we do, we work both with individuals and with teams, like I said. The coaching relationship up for an individual is anywhere from 6 to 9 months, depending on the size of the organization and their budget, frankly, and what they're willing to invest in that leader. So a lot of that depends on the level of the leader. we work with teams, then the then that cohort goes again through either that, that same process that they go through together. The interesting thing is in faith-based organizations, getting the leadership team to start that soon enough, because the way so many churches rotate their council, there's it's a long development cycle, right? 9 months. Well, there's some people already going off the council now after the first year. At our church, we elect people to those positions in May. They take office at the August meeting, and then they may have a 2-year term, but the council as a whole is only, you know, a cohort for that until that next May. So there's a little bit of a challenge, and what we found is that it works best just to limit the cohort coaching to the executive committee, because they tend to come on and off more together. We're still trying to figure that out. In the corporate world, it's a little bit easier, because the HR will be more involved. Specifically, they bring it in either because there's a high potential, somebody that's moving up in the organization, or there's an issue. There's been complaints, and then we get called in to do some coaching and some remediation. We spend a lot of time on the feedback, and we do practice. We practice that, and we send people out to practice some things. And I'll tell you what, the people that are open to that level of self-examination and vulnerability find the most benefit from the whole process. And there's one person that I'm working with right now that I think, you know, we had a really hard session before I came up, because there was some really hard feedback. He thought he was all that in a bag of chips. And some of the feedback that came back was like, yeah, no, actually, no. See, over here, this happened, and then this happened, and this is an example of not communicating. And he worked really hard in that session, and then I found out he sent me an email afterwards saying, yeah, thanks. It was hard to hear. By the way, I sent it. I talked with so-and-so and apologized, and I've been, he's all over it. He's all over it. It's crazy. We haven't even gotten to the assignment how to remediate the stuff yet. He's really anxious to do better at it, so it's cool. The relationship review is that who do I art and who arts me. And I think if there's anything you take away tonight, that would be a question that you could ponder pretty easily without any other stuff. Just looking around and saying, you know, who do I admire, respect, and trust in the different groups that I'm operating in? Who do I need feedback from? And do they admire, respect, and trust me to give me honest feedback? So that's kind of what we're up to. Like I said, Mary wrote a book. We have all kinds of other stuff, workshops and things like that that we do. It's not in the bookstore. I didn't send it. We didn't get it from the public. It's hot. I couldn't get it.
Bookstore starting tomorrow, so I just wondered.
Oh, are you? Yeah, no, it's not. I brought one copy up with me because I was bringing music, and I wanted to bring clean underwear too.
People would be interested.
Yeah.
Huh?
People would be interested.
I think so. Yeah, and so you can order it off our website or on Amazon or Kindle Amazon is Kindle or Milk
or Oxford.
No, it's not an Oxford. He's got a couple on his desk. He's got a couple on his desk. If you have further questions, you can reach me through the website.
So on the corporate front, do companies approach you saying we want to engage these ideas? You know, so they approach you, and you are consultants.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of my girlfriend works at a smallish company who really could use something like this, but they are so resistant to it. And
right.
So,
so a couple different things. In a larger organization, like a big company, right, where they've got an HR department and they've got a training department and all this, we usually come in through the training department or the organizational development department. And they if they're really big, they have a coaching program for their hypos and their
small enough that the owner just to kind of be the
right,
guy
so
who
on
sets
the,
get on the train or
yeah,
whatever.
So and the guy that I was talking to you about, that's a small company.
Yeah.
Three guys own it. They've got a small staff. And I'm working with one of the leaders, and Larry's working with the other one. And the third one is kind of a silent partner, although we sent home some homework on for him, too, because sometimes the silent partner ain't and ought to be.
Or has more of an impact than one might think.
Right. And so because these two guys that really want to buy this third guy out, and we're like, okay, but until that point, you need to be together on what you're doing, and so you need to get Clark on board. And so we had a conversation with Clark, too. But that's a really small company, and we knew those guys.
Yeah.
Another small company, faith-based organizations, I usually get connected with them either from people that I know or through the Synod office. Like, I don't know if all Synod offices do this, but in Minneapolis and St. Paul, they have a few people on hand that they know are skilled at helping when there's situations. You know what I mean? Like if there's conflict, they call in bridge builders, or if it doesn't come to bridge builders, then there's a few coaches like this for the pastors. I'm working with some of the bridge builders, and I don't know if you're familiar with bridge builders. That's the Pete Steinke's work through the Alvin Institute, and then he took it out, but it's the conflict model around systems, family systems theory, based on family systems theory, and talking about parsing out what your themes of conflict are and helping to decide that. But that's where I'm finding all these pastors in those conversations that are like, I'm in this interim call and I'm supposed to be leading change and I don't know how. Even though they're skilled in systems, and they're skilled in helping people identify what their conflict systems, their patterns are, they don't know how to help the congregation change those systems. So that's where we're offering some. Because there's artful and artless ways of doing that, right? I think we all are old enough to have remembered the Herr Pastor model. My pastor growing up, this is how I learned how Robert Schull's words work. All in favor say aye. Opposed, nay, motion carried.
Right.
That was all one word, not even one sentence, one word. And you know, he was a good guy. I liked him. I learned a lot from him in confirmation. But that's a pre-this leadership model, right? This is back when the collar, you automatically got respect. Whether it was more than the surface deep is didn't matter, right? Where that was all going. I'm sure it was important.
9:20. Well, I don't know, how do you approach this with congregations where you have, say, owls, old wise Lutherans, that are stuck in their ways.
Yep.
The pastor wants to do something different. Council kind of wants to do something different. But you have this group that says, we've got the money, and we're going to not give you the money if we don't. Now, that's not really a Christian thing to do. But
no, but people do that all the time. One of the first congregations I served, we were held hostage by the lady that gave the biggest amount, you know, and if you don't pick the paper that I want for the kitchen, I'm not going to give my gift next year.
But do you just say, okay, no?
Well, the pastor that said that was an interim pastor, so he could, because he knew he wasn't going to stick around anyway. And he didn't say it, he said it in a very artful way, not that I had anything to do with that, but I watched this happen. And she did give her gift the next year. We didn't do things the way she said. Were you in the movie last night? So last night they showed A Time for Burning, the story about Bill Nundahl down in Omaha in 1965, '66, with his big idea was to do an exchange with his LCA congregation with the predominantly African-American LCMS congregation to have 10 couples get to know each other. And they got his resignation, 9 months after he started doing this? I worked for this.
Missouri Senate.
Well, it was more the
more
the racial thing than
racial
there was the Missouri here, the the LCA was denominational.
Yeah, they filmed, and it was filmed everything. I mean, they virtually filmed all of the social ministry meeting.
It's a very powerful film.
It's very powerful.
But yeah, how do you, the exhibition of the old wise Lutherans in that film was verbatim from any council meeting, probably from last week. It was just, we haven't changed. Yeah.
And there's something within us that are wanting change.
I know.
The alternative service where
right.
the kids just went to New Orleans.
Yeah.
And they come back and they're all hyped up.
Yeah.
But we haven't.
Right.
We're done.
Well, how many of you have come back from a Holden village and gone,
yeah.
something, you know, whether it's worship or whether it's, you know, a service project or recycling. Oh my gosh, the day that I suggested that we not use styrofoam cups at coffee. But who's going to do the dishes? Well, you know. So, yeah, it's not an easy, it's not, oh, I've got, give me this one, this is, go. Yeah, change is hard. Change is hard, and it takes courage. And it's like she was talking about in the earlier Bonhoeffer session that you probably skipped too, where you just. But yeah, where you know you just go. You walk off the cliff with Christ,
yeah.
And if that's where your call, and you know we can talk about that in faith communities. That's why I like doing this stuff in faith communities more even than the corporate stuff because I get to talk about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you're called that to do that, if that's the gospel message, sometimes that means you're going to lose your job. But isn't that what we're called to do? Are we called to protect our job, or are we called to serve the other? That doesn't mean that you have to be a jerk about it.